Hello, everyone, and welcome to the TakeCast. This is going to be a hopefully weekly podcast with myself, Davis Matic. I'm not going to promise you guys weekly, but I've been out of the podcasting game too long. I have too many takes to fire off. I have too many opinions that can't be put down to, I guess, 240 characters or whatever the limit is on Twitter now. I am joined this week and hopefully most weeks by my good pal, Michael Leone from DailyRoto.com. But I do need to make it clear we are not sponsored by any touting website. So there will be swearing. There will be discussion of things that are currently illegal in the states that Michael and I live in, such as sports betting and other things of that nature. Mike, how you doing, pal?
I'm doing good. I'm excited to be on this podcast for the inaugural episode. I'm glad we figured out a time. You know, I know that time difference for you can be difficult. So
I don't actually know what time it is where you are right now. I just correlated everything to my time when I put it in my calendar. You live in a fictional island to me, basically.
Well, you did a great job. I'm the one who had like the messed up schedule. I had to delay this. So if it wasn't for me, we would have already had the hot takes out.
Well, you do like own a child, right? So you have a lot of responsibilities.
Yeah.
The whole
child thing, definitely. That's a big deal for sure.
But I mean, you work from home, so you can just like shake his little, you know, car seat, his little crib. You can hang out with your kid like while typing up your analysis of like the New York Yankees or whatever.
Not exactly how it goes, but I am super lucky that my mom lives close and she babysits.
Oh, that's huge.
Like 4 or 5 hours a day, every day, which lets me do things like the TakeCast. So she's a saint. There's no two ways about it. So
shout out Mama Leone.
Hell yeah. But no, he's no longer at the stage where you could just put him in a crib and rock
leave
him.
Yeah.
He's all over the place. But it's actually kind of fun because we were talking before, I've got my Garmin on, you've got your Fitbit on, and working from home, sometimes the step count is pretty gross. It's pretty ugly, very, very low. But with him, the hours that I do watch him in the day, it just makes sense to just go somewhere, do something, get out of the house. So my steps have actually been a lot better with him.
I have a dog and there's like a hiking trail at these apartments that I live in. So I get my 10,000 in every day. No problem. It's a good life.
So if you want to get your steps in, either have a baby or a dog. Buy a dog.
Yeah.
One or the other.
All right. Well, let's get into some takes. The reason that I finally wanted to actually start doing a podcast on my own, not affiliated with a website, was because I didn't have a platform to talk about sports betting legalization on any podcast. You know, once FI closed their doors, there was nowhere for me to fire these takes off. And, it's important to talk about sports betting because I'm a massive fish and I've donked off a lot of BTC over the years on sports betting. And now I can legally do that and claim that on my taxes, hopefully. But I wanted to start from this point, which is, I think, something I haven't really heard people talk about. How much more popular do you think sports betting is going to get? Because, I mean, truly, do you know anyone who would like to sports bet who could not find an avenue to doing so?
It's an interesting question because I think on one end, most people feel like the people that really want a sports bet can find a way. You know, it's not that hard to find a local bookie if you want to bet offshore. I've got a cousin who drives up to Canada and plays those stupid parlay tickets where the odds are just horrific. But the point being that you generally can find a way if you want to. With that said, I still think the people that just assume that everyone who wants to bet is already betting are wrong. I think it is going to get a lot more popular, you know, even if it's just casual people who aren't betting a ton of money, maybe they're just throwing down $50 every other week or every weekend on NFL football on a weekend or something. That barrier to entry is a lot less. And I know someone like myself, for example, I don't bet a ton of money. You know, the guys at Daily Roto and I, you know, I'll kind of run a fund on Sportsbook, which is a horrific website. The reputation of it is not good, and you never know for sure if you're going to get paid, but
you use sportsbook.ag?
Yeah, I just don't have very many.
That website's
options.
Too sketchy for me to even deposit. I've always used Bovada, and I will actually say, anyone listening, I have processed payments from them 2 times. And it arrived late. It took a long time for the money to get there, but both times I did get a check It was from like it, they set up these like fake corporations, right? Like you cash out and you're like getting a check from like China or like Taiwan, like straight up. That's what shows up to your house. It's wild.
But they actually have been paid by Sportsbook before, but I know there's definitely stuff out there that they don't always pay. So for me, it's like, I'm obviously not betting big money with a site that, even though I've withdrawn and gotten paid before, I'm worried like if I ever won big that I actually wouldn't get paid.
Every time I deposit, I'm like, I'm not going to see this money again.
Yeah, exactly. So there's this weird feeling where you want to win, but you almost don't want to win too much. And it's just
You can throw a parlay on like Mark Leishman and the Rockets and be like, well, if it doesn't hit, it's fine. It's fake internet money anyway.
Yeah. I would have just lost. I wouldn't have been paid anyways. So it doesn't matter, but I love betting golf, man. So that's probably my favorite to bet. So I'm looking forward to doing that more regularly.
There's no better sweat than betting golf. Like truly.
No, I love betting top 20s. That's my thing, like long shot top 20s. And that's the thing too. I think sportsbook.ag, because it's probably only fish that bet on there like me that aren't going to get paid. They really make the odds horrific on all the good golfers. By horrific, I mean, you know, much lower. So
Spieth was like what, like 4-1 to win this last week?
Yeah, like we do an odds comparison between them and Bet365, just because they're easy to scrape the odds and we can look at based on our golf. I know we're going to talk about golf a little bit later on, but we can see like the expected value of the bets based on our finish probabilities, which is pretty cool. So you can directly see if it's a good bet or not. Sometimes it's hard to like see like, oh, you know, he's plus 330 for a top 20. Like, is that a good bet? Is that not a good bet? So, but anyways, the point being that the long shots on sportsbook are, you know, almost always ridiculously EV. If you can just withstand the variance, and betting top 20s helps do that. So I'm looking forward to being able to do it more regularly and do it a bit more seriously than I do now without having that concern of, am I actually going to see this money or not?
Am I going to get paid out? Yeah. Like I would be more willing to dedicate more financial resources towards sports betting. And honestly, actually probably take it serious. I don't take most bets I play seriously at all. Like it's think there might be an edge, but I'm not going to spend too much time thinking about something, you know, that isn't 100% legit, but, something that is correlated to this. So both you and I mentioned the offshore sites that we use. So assuming that this becomes legal in all 50 states, or at least the states that you and I live in, where do you think you will place your sports bets? Will you line shop? Will it be, you know, DraftKings or FanDuel still on the offshore sites, like a physical location? Because there will be physical locations, especially close to you living in New York.
I'd imagine that it's going to be very ripe for line shopping. You know, maybe I'm completely wrong, but like all the offshore books, like I can't do Bovada out of New York. You know, there's some of the actually okay websites out there that are more reputable than sportsbook.ag that, you know, because I'm in New York, it just seems people are more afraid to, you know, expand in New York right now when it's illegal. With it being legal in the future, I'd imagine that won't be the case and that you can really line shop. Because if you're betting just super, super casually, it probably doesn't matter. You're probably just looking at convenience. But if you're doing even moderately seriously, the line you're getting is so important.
It really is. Yeah. And I don't think, I think a lot of people are not going to know that. You're right. Like they're not going to think of the difference between like minus 105 and minus 115, which like is actually like a big difference, but you don't really think about it. Like when I first started betting games, when I was like 17 or whatever, I didn't care.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you still want to make sure, like, just because it's going to be legal, you still want to make sure you're using a reputable source where you know you're going to get paid. Like, that's what I'm most excited about, is knowing that I'm going to get paid and having that confidence. So I'm not going to go crazy, because there's still probably going to be some shady sites out there that you're not going to want to use. So, but there are, I know Wilson pointed me to a link, like a sportsbook review site. I'm assuming, you know, there will be more of those that pop up that kind of tell you the perks of like what site you should use.
I wonder if like ESPN and like Fox Sports or whatever will have like affiliate deals with online sports books. Like that would be huge.
Probably, right? I mean, why wouldn't they?
That would be very good for the, well, I kind of think ESPN learned their lesson with DraftKings. So I would actually be, I think it's not as likely as maybe you would assume that they would immediately get in bed.
Yeah, but I think the reason with the issue with like DraftKings and stuff was because gambling wasn't legal and there was the whole skill versus gambling. But once you make gambling itself legal, I don't and the money in sports betting compared to what it is.
Oh, it's way more. Yeah, way more.
Yeah, it's, you know, tenfold. So I'd imagine you see something like that, but it'll be fun to be able to shop lines. Like I was saying with the golf too, with getting very different lines, you know, there's going to be some lines where like the long shot golfers, just the way that book operates, you're going to get really good EV on those. But you know, you might jump over to another book where you can bet one of the top guys and actually have a better win probability because the lines there are not as egregious. So it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens. I don't know if you've got any ideas on like how long it's going to take. I'd imagine it's going to take
longer than people think. Yeah. Like I think there are like some stories coming out about like, you know, I think maybe like New Jersey is a place that kind of already has had the legal framework in place for this. Like you can already play online poker in New Jersey. So like there are some states that already had a framework ready for this, but like where I live, I mean, it'll be 2 years probably. Before.
Yeah, I was thinking next summer, hopefully for New York, but that's really just a hot take guess. I have nothing to back that up.
Well, it would not have happened, but your attorney general just resigned, and he was super anti-gambling, super anti-daily fantasy. But if the new attorney general is a little bit, it's very annoying to me. I'm hardcore left when it comes to politics, right? But leftist politicians are very anti-gambling, very anti-fantasy, and it's very frustrating to support people like that.
It is, because it feels a little bit false, you know, what they're trying to do. And that's when you really start to see the ugly side of politics. You realize it's all about money. But I mean, that's what we saw with DFS in New York. Once New York got their cut, it was fine. It passed, got through, which was, you know, it really had nothing to do with everything they said it did. It just had to do with money. And that whole thing was like a disgusting show of politics. Even like the lobbying on the DFS site's part, you know, where they had to, I mean, it was just this super, everyone's arguments were super flimsy, but they had to take this stance and they couldn't talk like straight because it would just hurt their argument. Like,
it was a disgusting show.
And you know, the AG was saying how it's gambling, but at the same time he was saying how only the really skilled players win, which completely contradicts itself. And the daily fantasy sites themselves had their own contradictions, and like you couldn't have a straight conversation. And I got why, because as soon as you do have a straight conversation, you open yourself up legally to certain things. But it was really frustrating to watch. And gambling is an interesting one where I feel like left, right, you know, you just never really seem to know where people are going to fall on this one. It seems to kind
of, because it's both a moral issue for the right, but then for the left, it's also a protecting the people issue, which I will say, mm-hmm. I mean, sports gambling exists because it funnels money from people who don't have very much money to people who have a lot of money. Like, say whatever you want, more people will lose at sports gambling than they will at daily fantasy. And it's not money changing hands in between two users on DraftKings. It's money going from your pocket to William Hill or to wherever. And the chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, yeah, maybe if you're listening to a sports podcast, you have a little bit better of an edge, but you'll probably lose. Over the course of your lifetime, you'll probably lose.
Yeah, Rachel Nichols and Scott Van Pelt from ESPN had good tweets on it, basically saying what you said, where it's not a bad way if someone wants to spend $20 on a Friday night or something and it's a form of entertainment, they probably should be able to do that. But like, don't kid yourselves at the overall arching point, which is that a lot of casual sports fans are going to lose money.
Like, I'll admit it on this podcast right now, if I would not have hit Jordan Spieth at the 20 or Danny Willett at the 2016 Masters for as much money as I did, I would be a loser in sports betting probably.
Yeah, I think I'm right around even, just bouncing around. Like I said, when it becomes regulated or whatever in New York, once you can actually do it legally, I'll be tracking it a lot more seriously. But now, as we were talking before, you might throw a little bit down on a parlay you don't really care about, just because.
Yeah, and that's true. Like, I've punted off like I have money on like futures and like dumb golf bets that like I never like, because you take the much more analytical approach to golf, whereas, like, I'll listen to these podcasts and I'll be like, well, if I heard that this guy at 150 to 1 is a favorite of Dave Kellner, who might win, I would be dumb to not put $10 on that. And, like, yeah, that's not big in and of itself, but when you do that every week for 30 weeks and none of them hit, you know.
Yeah.
That's minus
golf. I've noticed golf, both golf betting Twitter and golf DFS Twitter, and it's interesting. Those two intersect so much more than any other sport. Yeah. But it's interesting. They love the long shots.
Well, because it only takes one to make your season. You hit yeah. one guy at 125 to one, and you've had a profitable year.
And generally, I mean, you are getting better prices on those guys. The pricing is less efficient. It just like we did the expected value on, I think it was TJ Vogel this past week, was one of our top EV bets for winning. If you didn't take, like, just looking at the expected value of the bet, not the probability of winning the bet actually happened. And it was because we had him at a 0.46% chance winning, and the sportsbook odds had him at a 0.26% chance winning, which percentage-wise is a massive discrepancy, and that's why it was such crazy high expected value bet. But when you I think anyone betting needs to, expected value is one part of it, but you also need to look at the probability of actually winning the bet. And that's where, I don't know if you use anything like Kelly Criterion. Like we said, we're just throwing money around right now, kind of casually.
Yeah, no, right now, so, there's no calculations. I'm not running anything through anything.
You should just pretend you are. But
there's a bet where I think, like, for NBA stuff, yeah, I've been betting some of these playoff series and stuff, and yeah, I've been looking a lot more closely and actually looking at some numbers, but for golf, no, I'm not.
Drew had me put some on the Sixers to win the East. We were so jacked up for that. It was like +800, I think, at the time.
You can't do that because I think that's a terrible bet because they just had never been there before.
What is that? That's
a real thing in the NBA. No, that's a real thing in the NBA. Experience matters so much in the playoffs.
Well, JJ Redick was one of the biggest reasons they lost that series, and he had the experience.
I mean, I just think that the moment, and also I think the coaching edge in that series was like
wild. The coaching edge was absurd. If you switch to coaches, I have people who are way smarter than me, know way more than basketball than me, say that if you switch to coaches, it would have been 4-0 Philly, like that extreme.
Totally agree. Here, we'll transition after this because we don't want this to be a 2-hour podcast. who wins the Cavs-Celtics series? Because I think this is one of the most fascinating series of the last 3 or 4 years.
I think the Celtics win. Coaching edge, home court advantage. They're just so – even with all the injuries they've had, they're so well-rounded. They're so deep that I like the Celtics.
Is Terry Rozier really this good? Because this is like insane.
His assist to turnover ratio is absolutely absurd. What should they do with Kyrie, Rozier? That whole dilemma. They got to get rid of somebody. I mean,
well,
right?
What would Rozier shoot from three over an 82 game season if he was playing as a shooting guard? I think you answer your question that way because you let Marcus Smart go, and you.
Yeah, that's what's difficult is they're going to lose a really good player what they do.
And I think if you believe that Rozier can shoot 38%. Playing as the off-ball guard next to Kyrie, then you keep him. If you think that he's like a 34% three-point shooter, you keep Marcus Smart. I think it's kind of that simple.
Yeah, he's probably I think 34%, 30. I mean,
because Smart is better at everything off the ball than Rozier is, right? I mean, is that a hot take? He's like an elite rebounder. He's a great defender.
Yeah. No, I don't think that's a hot take. So who do you have winning the series?
Oh, I think the Celtics do, and then I think they lose in four games.
I mean, it's also easy to say the Celtics because they're up 2-1 with home court advantage even after getting trounced.
I mean, here we'll go. Cards on the table. I bet the Cavs in game two because I was like, there's no way LeBron is coming out and losing this game. And he had a 42-point triple-double, and they still lost.
That theory, like there's no way LeBron's going to lose, like as if the people making the line haven't been in this situation.
I think the lines for every game in the Warriors series have been bad, though.
As in, they should have been more on the Warriors?
Yeah, as in like the Rockets were favored in that first game. That was the biggest NBA bet I made of the year, actually. Was I bet the Warriors pretty big in that first game?
I actually bet on the Rockets with Glenn just for fun, just because I want the Rockets to win. But luckily we ran it back game two, so
you bet on the Rockets. You bet on the Rockets being favored over the Warriors.
And then I got them plus 1.5 the next one.
So, you know? It's just so horrible. Imagine the Warriors being underdogs to anyone.
It was just for fun, dude.
Fair enough. That's what we're talking about. This is why
Glenn hates the Rockets. Like, either that or he absolutely sweats the Warriors. He's with you. He thinks these lines have been 100%.
Well, I hate the Warriors too. They actually, this is a good transition because we're going to talk about the Bills and the Cowboys right now. This is a really good transition because I actually noticed this the other day. Kevin Durant leaving Oklahoma City, I don't care as much about sports anymore. I don't care about the results of individual games for my teams as much as I used to, because that was like the moment where I was like, these people do not care about me. They don't care about my life or the way that I feel.
It works both ways, right? I mean, you don't really care about them either unless they're wearing your jersey.
I think that if Durant would have left for any other team and in any other way than announcing it on the fucking Players Tribune, I think it would have been, because I still like Cantor plays for the Knicks, but I still really like him. Like there are players that do not play for the Thunder anymore that used to, that I still like and follow. But
from his, like, I'm just saying from his point of view,
he shouldn't owe me anything. He shouldn't feel bad. I'm just saying.
No, not only that, but like from like his point of view, like he's going where he wants to go. It's best for him. Like, I don't think he's like saying, "Oh, I don't care about Thunder fans, so I'm going to go to Golden State." Like, I don't think it might feel differently for you that he went to Golden State, but as far as what that means as to how he cared about OKC, I don't think it's
no, like, he was not trying to dunk on Oklahoma City. He wasn't trying to like be like, oh, this time didn't matter at all. And honestly, if Westbrook had been more mature about the whole thing, it would be very different, but that's not the type of
how do you feel about Westbrook? Like, that is one of the players I am most conflicted on.
I'll ride him to the grave. I don't care. Shoot 40 times and make one shot against the Jazz. I don't care.
I'm most conflicted on him. I've been heavily in his corner, but it was tough at times this year.
The thing that you like about a player like Westbrook as a fan is that you know no one's ever cared more in the history of basketball than he has.
Oh, the effort is absolutely tremendous. It's just from an athleticism standpoint, you just see things that you don't see. But then from an analytical, how much he's actually helping the team standpoint, like there's obviously a disconnect between those things. And it's tough to really
figure out what to do with that. He's bad, it's brutal to watch, man. But when he's bad,
which he was for a while, it's off. But when he's awesome, it's like basketball nirvana. It's like
watching Allen Iverson on steroids or something when he's good.
Matt Kelly of Player Profiler hates Westbrook so much. I got in.
That sounds like something. That sounds like an opinion he would have. Yeah, he, that makes sense.
No holds bar. Absolutely hates.
You know who I hate? Carmelo Anthony. Thanks, man. Thanks for pick up that player option and just completely submarine everything.
Dude, I was hopeful. I was the guy that was like,
I was pretty hopeful.
Maybe he'll do the Olympics Carmelo, right? That was everyone's hope. If he went to Houston or OKC, it was like, could he be Olympics Carmelo? It's amazing how bad he was. Like, if he didn't play, they probably won the series.
He was Olympics Carmelo, but he just couldn't shoot. He just forgot how to make three-pointers.
Which, yeah, if you're having Olympics Carmelo, that's the whole point of Olympics Carmelo, is that he's making the three-pointers.
All right, so Bills, how many training camp videos of Josh Allen have you watched? Where are you at with Josh Allen right now?
I've watched a couple. It's difficult to explain to people that I do my best to separate my fandom and my objective analysis.
Yeah.
Yeah. role. And so, you know, I'm watching videos of him. He actually seems like a pretty cool guy. You know, I watched they had a real long segment about him from his hometown and all that stuff. So, you know, I watch that stuff. I get jacked up. You know, I watch some of these throws from the Senior Bowl that are absolutely insane, that there might be like four people on the planet that can make these throws. So I get jacked up and hopeful that it works out and the ceiling's huge. But in the the analyst chair, I know that you're fighting some major historical precedents. And on top of that, not just with him, the decision to trade up twice, it just doesn't give you a lot of faith in the organization overall moving forward, almost regardless of what happens with Josh Allen. And it sounds like the Bills were really trying to trade up even more for Josh Allen. They just got saved by Elway being an idiot, Gettleman being an idiot.
Gettleman, what a legend Gettleman has been throughout this whole process. Just everything he says is dumber than the next thing he says. Like, it's incredible.
It is baffling that he has a job. Like, there are people who might not be hardcore. It's not like you need to be hardcore analytics to have a job, right? Like, maybe you should have – I mean, you should have to have some knowledge of that, some to incorporate that to an extent. But there are people out there that at least they're not outwardly – almost bragging that they don't use it, you know. like he was almost bragging that they weren't going to trade that pick and they were going to take Saquon Barkley,
which is going to be a nightmare. Like, Saquon is going to have like 1600 combo yards and like 80 catches, and they're going to win like five games.
And he's amazing too. And that's the other thing it's tough to explain to people. This
people are going to be like, they made the right pick. Look how good he is. He's great.
To bring it back to the Bills, it reminds me of the Watkins trade where...
Oh, was Watkins ever really that good that people said that, though?
He was pretty good there for a while. Like, his... I know you'll mock him because you hate him and you're
a terrible person. No, the thing is he's going to be really good this year. He's going to be the best year of his career this year in Kansas City.
He had like a 16-game pace that, when you adjusted for how often the Bills threw, was, you know, pretty close to Odell Beckham's 16-game start, if you go back and look at it. And it just – because he missed some time and because the Bills didn't throw a lot, I think it went overlooked, like, how good he was there those first couple of seasons.
Sure, I buy that. The point
being, though – that there's no way the Bills should have traded an extra first round pick for the ability to draft him in a draft that had Mike Evans and Odell Beckham, and somebody was going to fall. And sure enough, the Giants, I think, took Odell Beckham in our original spot.
They did.
Can you imagine spending an extra first round pick so you could have? And that's the whole thing, is these GMs just get so egotistical to believe that they're that much better at evaluating players.
Right. Whereas all the good teams know, just take as many bites at the apple as you can. I mean, at this point, that's just like such tired, like, everyone in the world who's intelligent knows you just want to take a lot of draft picks.
And with the Josh Allen thing, the scariest part is maybe he does end up defying the odds and is awesome and really good. We might not know because the team is so fucking bad.
It's so bad. Yeah.
I mean, the offense is egregious. I don't think people in Buffalo really understand. And the other thing, too, is because we played in a division with Tom Brady and he's just bashed our brains in for 20 years or whatever, people honestly think that if you have the quote-unquote franchise quarterback, that quarterback is just going to elevate everybody and make it work. And it is funny watching people say with Josh Allen, oh, well, he didn't have the talent around him in college and that's why he was bad, after a year of just absolutely throwing Tyrod Taylor under the bus
when he was throwing to like Kelvin Benjamin wearing soiled Pampers. Kelvin Benjamin is so slow, man. It's like absurd.
He's bad. I mean, he's big. Yay, good.
He should be a tight end. He should be Jason. He should be Jimmy Graham.
I can't believe they went into this offseason and their wide receiver acquisition was Jeremy Curley and drafting this Ray Ray guy over that Equanimeous St. Brown, who's like 6'5", and they drafted this Ray Gadget guy who's like 5'10".
They love the gadget guys. The Bills love the gadget guys who like can't play.
But if you're like, and if you're clearly rebuilding, like why would you get a gadget guy that might be, okay, maybe he's more solidly useful in a few ways and more likely to have some level of usability, but how do you not take a chance on developing, you know, a wide receiver one, wide receiver two? They're obviously going to suck. I don't know. There's so many little things that in and of themselves don't seem like a big deal. But when you look at the big picture, it's like Chris Ivory, Mike Tolbert, like you just wonder if they have any idea whatsoever what they're doing offensively.
Well, speaking of gadget players, my favorite team just traded for my least favorite player.
Oh my God.
The Dallas Cowboys.
Holy shit, dude.
Traded for T-Bone Austin.
So the quick recap of the off seasons for our two teams, very publicly stated, I don't want the Bills to draft Josh Allen. I don't want them to trade up. I will be okay with anything other than them doing both. And they did both. And then your team out of like nowhere just wasn't even a possibility on the table, traded for the player that you hate most in the entire NFL. It goes against everything you stand for.
Not only that, they have doubled down on this decision, saying they want to give him 12 to 24 touches a game. They're calling him a web back, whatever that means. They don't fire Jason Garrett. They don't try and talk to Dez Bryant early in the offseason about restructuring his contract or cutting him. So they let Bryce Butler, who is the best wide receiver prospect on the team, go to Arizona for $400,000 a year, like basically the veteran minimum. And they get rid of my other favorite prospect on the team, Ryan Switzer, who was like a really dynamic punt returner and like was getting along, is much better than Cole Beasley, by the way, Ryan Switzer is. And they trade him to the Raiders to make room on the roster for T'Von Austin. And it's just like, there's no plan because no one knows who actually runs the team. No one knows if Jerry or his son actually runs the team. Jason Garrett is just this like laughable coach who got, I mean, how much better can you run as Jason Garrett than discovering Tony Romo on your bench and then having Dak Prescott fall to you and play so well? Like, it's he runs so hot. And the whole team's idiot philosophy is that if you play slow, the defense can't get exposed. And
which has been disproven.
I'm completely.
Yeah. And you mentioned when Durant left how you just cared a little bit less. Like each year with the Bills, which is weird to say because they broke the playoff drought last year, but just the way they run things. And as you initially get these new coaches, new GMs in, and you convince yourselves it could be different. But as you start to see the writing on the wall that it's not, I definitely don't have the same level of enthusiasm that I used to. Like I still get excited. You know, I've been a crazy Bills fan since I was little, but I'm sure this season is going to be ugly. There's going to be times that I'm on NFL Red Zone and not watching the Bills, which I know makes me sound like a horrible fan, but it's tough to care that much every single year about a team that's just run horribly.
My moment for the Cowboys was the Dez game when the Dez caught it game. That was the pinnacle of me caring, and then since then it's gone. Even that was
more like a screw you sports. This is just
right,
dumb.
Yeah. It was just like if this can't be ruled a catch, if they can't do this properly, then like why should I be so emotionally invested? Because the Cowboys are the team I care the most about. Of all the teams that I root for and all the athletes that I like and watch, the Cowboys have always been in first place. Even in the Durant, Westbrook, Harden, Thunder years, the Cowboys were still ahead. And so my dad and his brothers, they got the payoff of that, right? Like they got the glory years of Dallas being
at the expense of my dad.
Right. Whereas I have nothing. I have no positive. Every good Cowboys year was followed by like, you know, losing, like getting mercy ruled by the Vikings or, you know, Aaron Rodgers destroying us or, you know, Tony Romo fumbling us. Like it always ended bad.
Dude, I feel you. I've had season tickets for the first year my dad and I got season tickets. I was in eighth grade. It was the first year of the playoff drought. So we had season tickets for a 17-year playoff drought. And we're not going to have them this upcoming year, first time. You know, we had them for the start of the playoff drought to the end of the playoff drought, but you know, we don't have them coming up this year. It's a little bit sad, but at the same time, it just goes back to what we're saying. It's hard to keep caring at that same level.
It is. It's just, it's hard. It's hard to sustain an emotional connection when you just get dunked on. It, like anytime you open yourself up to being vulnerable, just dunked. We're going to skip golf though, because I don't want this to be like a 2-hour podcast. So we're going to talk golf next week, because I think this conversation is more interesting to most people who listen. We're going to talk crypto. If you don't like cryptocurrency, if you don't like Bitcoin, if you don't like Ethereum, that's not your bag. You just like sports. You can feel free to tune out. But we are going to talk crypto right now. First question I have for you, Mike, what is your portfolio like? Are you mostly Bitcoin? Are you long on any particular shitcoin? What's it looking like for you?
So let me pull up my blockfolio real quick.
Okay, that was gonna be my second question, is because the blockfolio addiction is how I separate people from that like own a little bit of Bitcoin to like people that are addicted to it. And if you refresh your blockfolio more than once a day, like you're in the gang.
Yeah, I think my most liked tweet ever was, you know, asterisk buys crypto to hold long term, space, checks blockfolio 30 times a day. So that seemed to resonate with everyone. So yeah, not just know. Me, but I am, let me look in terms of percentages here. I'm about 50% Bitcoin, 40 to 50%, you know, obviously it hovers because sure. It's so volatile that
the answer is going to be different an hour from now.
And then like 35% Ethereum. So I'm pretty heavy in those two. A little bit of Monero, a little bit of Litecoin. And then I gave Logan Hitchcock, who writes for Daily Roto, some money to get on
Cryptopia and around. Just buy shit coins.
Yeah, exactly. I tracked that one on Delta. Got it separated. If you check out the Delta app, that's pretty good if you've got the shit coins. That's crazy to watch, man. And then like our goal there is to just get more Bitcoin. So it's weird because like I'm trying not to watch the
no, but then but then dollars. when the alt spikes, you sell it back into Bitcoin. Yeah,
right. Because the idea is to just acquire more Bitcoin so that, because the idea is you believe in Bitcoin long term, and this is just a way to get more Bitcoin.
Well, that is not the idea for everyone. That is
It's not. It's not for everyone. So because you can just make a quick buck doing it, but like our idea is, you want Bitcoin long term. This is a way we can make more Bitcoin. We can get more Bitcoin rather than just directly buying it. It's like the theory behind it. I don't know if it works. Is working in practice.
I mean, Bitcoin. Oh, Bitcoin down, does like, we're beat down. Everything over the long term, but in the short term, it gets beaten by a lot of things just due to the way market caps work.
Right. So, like, we're down in USD because Bitcoin's been down, but we've acquired more Bitcoin through the alt. Like, we're up in terms of BTC to, you know. Whatever.
There was a little alt season like maybe like a month and a half ago. Everything kind of got greened up a little bit.
We got in the tail end of that. Our fund doubled in a week completely, and then within a month after that, we were down. It was cut in half. We did not pocket enough, but it was hard though because the idea, our main idea, like I said, was to get more Bitcoin. But our other idea was like, let's just see if we can get really lucky.
Sure. That's why profiting in anything is so hard, is because the logical thing is to go in with a plan and then follow that plan, right? To be like, okay, I'm going to trade this up. I'm going to double my Bitcoin, or I'm going to 100x my USD. Right. And that's where you get greedy and it's just like, well, shit, what do I do?
Market timing is the equivalent of GMs trading up in the draft. The egotistical belief that you can time the market. And I think that's one, like if you're getting into it, one mistake I made was like, I didn't know a lot about it. And then I learned a lot about it in a week. And I was like, okay, I'm convinced I'm going to buy all my Bitcoin and all my crypto now at once and just be done with it. Like that was kind of my initial thought, which was really stupid. I should have done an average cost buy-in. But that's what I did. And it's crazy, even though, you know, someone like me who does DFS for a living, where you have to put your emotions on the sideline as best you can and just have a plan and make smart decisions and understand there's going to be variance. With all that said, when it's going up, it feels like it's never going to stop. and when it's going down.
There's like truly no, like, there's nothing like just feeling, buying something and having it go up 300% is like, it is like, cause I bought in it at the Bitcoin that I hold now. Cause I lost some other at a cheaper price. I bought in Bitcoin for the first time at like $400 and then lost it all sports betting. But the Bitcoin I hold now, I bought in for the first time at like 2,300. So when, you know, that week when it was at like 18,000, it was just like, I was like doing cartwheels, right? Like it just felt so good. And then, you know, now it's like, you made a modest profit, but it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. My whole thing is that, you know, I'm not putting in more money than I can afford to lose. My idea is sort of anti-fragile approach. If you read Taleb at all, his book Anti-Fragility talks about the barbell strategy where you do, you know, kind of like 90% pretty conservative stuff. And then you do 10% like very high risk, high reward. And you kind of just say everything in the middle is not worth it because it has more risk than you probably think. And it doesn't.
My portfolio is like. I'm like 50% Bitcoin, 40% Ethereum, 10% just total shit coins. Like I have like, you know, 109 Stellar Lumens sitting around in a wallet somewhere. But like that's like worth nothing, right? Like it's worth like pennies.
Yeah. So I would definitely say average cost buy-in if you get in though and like slowly get up to the number you want. Cause the issue I got in then is it tanked. Like I got Bitcoin mostly at like 13 to 15 and then it tanked and it was like, I believe in this. I should be smart and buy now. But it was hard to do that. One, cause of the emotions in it. And two, just because I had kind of, when I first bought in, just been like, I'm going to buy in. I'm going to wait 3 years. You know, I'm not into like mess around, do anything short term. But because I did it that way, I was kind of in as much as I wanted to be in. So I didn't really have the capital to buy back when it was low. I eventually did end up buying back when, you know, Ethereum and Bitcoin really tanked. Like I got some more Bitcoin in at 6K. I'm very jealous that you've got, you know, your initial starting point at 2K, but it's a wild ride. I've gotten to the point where I don't check Buckfolio nearly as often.
I go through phases, right? Like I go through phases where I like won't check it for a couple days, but I'm reading the Bitcoin Standard right now, which is this amazing book by Safedin Ammous. I'm actually going to try and see if he wants to do this podcast. He's hilarious on Twitter. He's like the biggest Bitcoin maximalist. Like everything other than Bitcoin to him is a shitcoin. Like Ethereum, shitcoin, Litecoin, shitcoin. Like mm-hmm. He's like dunking on Charlie Lee on Twitter. But the book itself, if you read it, it will make you want to convert your life savings into Bitcoin because I'm honestly starting to buy into it a little bit because the general thesis of the book is that government money is unsound. And because it can be printed and manipulated at the discretion of like whoever happens to be in charge at the time, there's just no way over the long term that holding your money in US dollars or British pounds or whatever government printed money, it just cannot be good. It is just definably bad. And so I think that kind of no matter what the Bitcoin price is, it's going to be worth more 2 or 3 years in the future from when you buy it. Like I kind of believe that Bitcoin 50 years from now will be like gold. A little bit. Like I actually do kind of believe that.
Yeah, I'm not all the way there, but I feel like there's enough of a chance and enough people that are smarter. Like this sounds like I'm a big sheep, but when there's a bunch of people whose methodologies I respect, who I know are just sharper than me, are into it, I'm going to take my chances on those types of things. And like I said,
when technology gets this big and this popular, like what example would you have of a technology being this good that then goes away? Like I don't.
Right. There's not really. I think that the issue is for it to take like that next step. There is this barrier of entry where it's pretty intimidating to buy Bitcoin and put it on a Trezor or a wallet or whatever.
Yeah,
and
I mean the technical barrier right now is quite high.
Like the idea that if you made a typo when you were transferring your money that you could lose, if you bought 10K worth of Bitcoin and you wanted to transfer to your wallet and you just accidentally typed in the wrong address, your money would just be gone forever.
I like, yeah, like what percentage
like that's
of
scary.
Of, what percentage of the American populace do you think owns, or even not even owns, has a, like a Coinbase or a Gemini account?
I think, God, I'm terrible at estimates like that, but I do think there's a big difference between people that probably buy some on Coinbase, where it is.
Well, 100%. Coinbase is like the 10-team standard league on ESPN.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Like that's, and I don't like keeping my money on the exchange, but someone who's just doing it casually probably would. I think
all my friends keep their Bitcoin on exchanges. I'm the only one of my real life friends who has a wallet. I think it's really dumb, but also I actually don't think it's very realistic that Coinbase gets hacked. Maybe it's possible, but I don't think it is.
Yeah, I mean, I have a little bit on Coinbase, but like most of my stuff's I've transferred to the wallet, but like that whole process is not easy.
No, the first time you send Bitcoin to a hard wallet, like you're going to be shitting. Like I was like sweating the first time I sent it to the wallet because I was like, what if I do this wrong?
Yeah.
And this is all gone?
We were talking about sports betting, how we don't want to bet too much because we might win and never see the money. Like there's still an irrational part of me that is like, Bitcoin's going to go to 100K and something's going to happen and I'm never going to actually realize it. Like I'm going to lose my wallet and the seed. And
this is actually
irrational. It's not going to happen, but like there is part of that in my brain that just feels like it's going to hit and you're going to fuck it up somehow. And you're never actually even going to realize it. Like that happened to people
who bought it in 2012. Yeah. And like, I actually listened to a good podcast recommendation, NPR's Planet Money. Very good. And during the Bitcoin boom, like kind of after Thanksgiving, that was when it really hit. There was an episode where they talked to a guy who bought like 200, 300 Bitcoins when it was worth like, you know, a nickel, and which was going through his attic trying to find the old jump drive that he put them all on. He didn't find it. No, he didn't find it. And he was like depressed. He was like distraught. Cause you know, that was, he had $1 million and he lost it. He couldn't find it.
I'm going to check my Bitcoin wallet.
Pretty much once a week, I plug my Bitcoin wallet in and check it just to make sure it's all there.
That's horrifying. And it is, at the same time, it's kind of shitty for you to be so depressed over something where it's not like, it's not like he spent $1 million on something and lost it.
No, but that's unrealized value. I get it.
I would be inconsolable. It's like when you don't win a DFS contest because you made the wrong 1v1 swap and it's like a six-figure.
Yeah, that's horrible.
Like, and it's horrible, but like, it is also terrible that it can it shouldn't affect us as much as it does. But I totally get why, because I'm the exact same way.
This is a good way for us to wrap up. I did not see one person discuss this, but I think sports betting legalization in the United States is going to have an impact on Bitcoin's price, because that was one of its main use cases, right? Like the reason I initially purchased Bitcoin, the way a lot of people, probably 3 to 4 of my friends in real life, their first purchase of Bitcoin was used to place on Bovada or Nitrogen to start making sports bets. And I think once you're able, I can see it going two ways. You're now able to use USD, right? Which makes the whole thing easier and gets Bitcoin out of the way. Or second, you want to keep your sports betting profits away and from government eyes, not taxable. So that gives more of a use case to not only Bitcoin, but like Monero and Zcash, which is Zcash now available on Gemini. And those are, you know, privacy coins, so untraceable. Do you see legalization having an impact on the price at all?
I feel honestly, like I just feel like that's above my head. I'm not smart enough to figure out what's going to happen there.
Oh, it's above my head too. That's why it's just.
I wonder the first scenario played out where people use the USD and they don't use it as much. What's interesting though is because Bitcoin's gotten so big since people first started doing that. Like you said you bought it solely for that purpose. But even if you decided to sports bet in USD, it's not like you'd be looking to get rid of your Bitcoin now because it's gotten so big since then. So it is
true. I would never sell Bitcoin.
Right. So like it is kind of interesting. It's not like if that happens, you're going to see people mass selling off Bitcoin. At least I don't think, because I think anyone who's savvy enough to buy Bitcoin to bet online probably understands the value on it has shifted so much.
Yeah. I do think that is something that was keeping the demand for it even. And now mm-hmm. that demand, I think, is going to be less. It's hard for me to say what the biggest demand for Bitcoin is. I do think the weaker the US dollar becomes, the more the enticing it is to buy Bitcoin.
Just the more chaotic our financial systems in general
get. And that's like I don't even know how many people know a ton about Satoshi or Bitcoin, but the whole impetus for creating Bitcoin was like the giant house of cards that came tumbling down in the 2008 housing crash. Read the Bitcoin Standard, everyone. That is my advice from you today. It's like, even if I'm not a pure Bitcoin maximalist either. Like, I own Ethereum and shitcoins and whatnot, but it makes you think. It also makes me care way less about politics and just being like, these people are all on the same team, and that team is to fuck me. The team exists to fuck me, you know.
It's pretty depressing. I think I feel like even the people that don't know they're on that team are on that team. Like, the people that even have good intentions are on that team, and I don't think there's that many people in that bucket, but even the ones that are,
yeah,
it's pretty depressing.
Good way to end the first Takecast. Leonie, thanks for joining me, pal. Hopefully we will be back or in some form. I'll have some guests for you guys next week. If you have any feedback for me, you guys know where to reach me on Twitter @DavisMatic. You guys can email me, davismatic@gmail.com. Probably we'll have like a theme song and stuff maybe next week. I'm working on some stuff behind the scenes. Maybe we'll find a sponsor for the show. If you want to sponsor the show, email me too. But everyone, thanks for listening, and hopefully see you back next week.